In doing interviews for I Remember When, I visited a number of senior centers in the city, and at times had the opportunity to address assembled groups, explaining the project to them and soliciting participants. It was not unusual on these occasions for me to mention an interest in doing a program on politics. Now, when I asked for recollections on politics in the city of their youths, it was not uncommon to be greeted by laughter and a chorus of corrupt, corrupt, in words to the same effect. And indeed, since back in 1903, when Lincoln Steffens called ours the worst-governed city in the nation, in his famous muckraking expose, Philadelphia Corrupt and Contented, the city has enjoyed a national reputation for the same. But what was it actually like? Well, today we're going to take a look at politics in the city between the two world wars, focusing in on the 1920s and early 30s, a period when Philadelphia was run by William Scott Vair, the Ashcart statesman.
Welcome, one and all, to I Remember When, Times Gone But Not Forgotten, a series of radio programs on the history of Philadelphia through the memories of those who have lived, loved, and labored in this, the fairest city in the land. So come back with us now to the days when Doe was politician and the ward leader was king, as we take you to the teeming immigrant wards of South Philadelphia in a program entitled Gang Rule in the City, or The Most Perfect Party Organization in the World.
I remember the Vair family were very active in politics here, and leaders controlled politics completely, and they were very popular among the foothold, the masses, the general voting public of the poorer neighborhoods, because they would always could provide a ton of coal for somebody who had to have it. Bad time, or some food, or something of that sort. They were kept very close watch over the needs and wishes and hopes and desires of their constituents. This was all mainly in South Philadelphia, of course. But they always took care of them, and in that way. Of course, now that we got this incredible financial mess, I don't know what could have been done then. If we had that kind of monetary problem.
Right.
But dollars were worth dollars in that time, and you could buy a great deal for a relatively small amount. But no debasement of the currency or anything of that sort, which we're now suffering from. And so that money could be handed out in large quantities. $10 would go a very long way. $500 would be the match today. But still, that was the way his general popularity was maintained and built up. So he had complete control of the party at that time.
When Lincoln Steffens wrote his famous article on the city's inimitable political style, Israel Durham, sixth in a line of Republican bosses dating back to the 1860s, was running the town. Izzy was followed by Sonny Jim McNichol, a North Philadelphia contractor and associate of state boss and United States Senator Boies Penrose. But the McNichol-Penrose faction never ruled unchallenged, for south of Market Street, power lay in the hands of some upstarts, the brothers George, Edwin, and Little Bill Vair.
The Vair boys had grown up at the bottom of South Philadelphia, amidst the hog pens, truck farms, and dumps of the Neck. The sons of a poor English truck farmer, they learned their politics while peddling vegetables by horse cart, in the practical school of ringing doorbells and holding the checklists of voters on election day. Demonstrating an uncanny knack for making friends, the boys eventually build a large contracting company based on municipal contracts, at the same time becoming leaders of the populous wards below South Street. Now, in the decades surrounding the turn of the 20th century, South Philadelphia was the major receiving area for the thousands of immigrants pouring into the crowded row house neighborhoods, the factories, docks, and shipyards of the river wards. And the Vairs rose to power representing these newcomers when they received but little recognition by the city government. With the election of Tom Smith as mayor in 1916, the Vairs for the first time gained control of city patronage, upon which any citywide political power had to be built. When they took control of the Republican City Committee a year later, their ascendancy was completed. For the next 18 years, then, Bill Vair ran the city, approving selection of most of the mayors, doling out jobs and favors, and bringing in the vote for the organization-sponsored candidates. But how was it all done? What held together the Republican organization's kingdom? Well, the Verlet organization maintained power through devotion to the little man and through personal service, as rendered by an army of loyal committeemen. Also through the manipulation of voting, influence with magistrates, and close links with the bootlegging, prostitution, and gambling underworlds. But personal service was the key with the people. In testimony before a Senate investigating committee in the late 1920s, the nature of the service was spelled out.
The Philadelphia organization is not only founded on republicanism, but one of its cardinal principles is to be of service along the line from the smallest officer up to the highest who is a candidate. They are instilled with the thought of service, service to their immediate neighbors. These services that the organization does are of various kinds. An immigrant lands in Philadelphia. The party committeeman helps him adjust to his new environment. Why, I recall when Jewish people first moved into the First Ward. The police wanted to interfere with their native practices. We stood between them and the police.
Sam grew up in the 39th Ward of South Philadelphia.
I always knew your ward leader, or your committee man.
Mm-hmm.
And our committee man was a fellow by the name of Mike Karp, and he had a man associated with him whose name was Bill Weeks. And if you ever had need for anything, you'd always go down and talk to the committee man.
What kind of things would you go to the committee man for?
Oh, if people had difficulty with, immigrant people always get into some kind of difficulty with the authorities. Through ignorance, through misunderstandings. So you would go to see the committee man, and he would also help you get jobs. When I was going to high school, it was the thing was always to get a job at the post office before the Christmas holidays. So I'd go down and see Mike Karp, and Mike Karp would send me to Barney Samuels, who was our ward leader, who later on became the mayor. And he would give me a letter, and I would take it to the post office, and they'd put me on for a week or 2 weeks, depending on how they anticipated the rush. And I did this for all the time I was in high school. Bill Vare was the mogul. He was the top man.
What did people think of him? Did you hear stories about him?
Yeah, see, the people on our level all liked him. For one very important reason, he helped them. And every politician, particularly on the ward level and the committee level, they're the doers. They're the ones who do things for the people, and that's how they're able to maintain their loyalty. And when they say, vote for Joe Doakes, you vote for Joe Doakes, not because you care for Joe Doakes, but because your committee man who has been doing things for you is asking you, in a sense, to now do something for me. So they didn't dislike, like we didn't dislike Mike Karp or Bill Weeks, and we didn't dislike Vare, because if you needed something, you went to Vare. Just like today, I'm sure it works the same way. You go to your committee man or your ward leader, if you know who he is and can get to him, and they'll do things for you, get you out of trouble. Of course, I remember as a kid hearing people, particularly the people who lived on the south side of the street, they'd get drunk and get arrested, or they'd always go to the committee man who, if I remember the term, would get a copy of the charges, and then they would release them, they wouldn't hold them. Of course, you had to go to, the person would have to go to a trial with a magistrate, in the magistrate's court, which was usually held at the police station. So they became the people you looked to for help.
Well, mostly I boozed up on the weekends. I generally end up in the same place every Sunday morning in the jailhouse. And of course, my boss was also the committee man in that section at the time. He just come over every morning because he knows he's going to have a gangster there at 10 Button when that police station ain't there anymore. I don't know if the building's still there or not, maybe. And he'd just come over on Sunday morning and say, that one's mine, that one, that's mine. And because there's generally at least a dozen of us in there. And when we got drinking. We just got fighting and busting up things, and we always got pinched. And this saved you from having to clean out the cells from treatment, and I'm trying to be a gentleman.
It doesn't matter.
And the piss and the vomit and stuff that from the guys, you know, from being sick. And so we didn't have to do these things because our committee was there. We'd just go out and he'd go out with us, and the magistrate would look at us, go on, get out of here. That was it.
I remember when my sister got out of high school, she went to work for an insurance broker. Not a broker. He was an adjuster. He would adjust claims and so on. And she decided that she wanted to go to college and take some night work. So she spoke to Mike Karp about it. And he says that he could get, I think it was referred to as a senatorial scholarship. So she went to Temple for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years in the evening, and she didn't have to pay for it. It was a political scholarship. And they did things like that. So that's why they had the loyalty of the people. You know, it's like anything else. What have you done for me lately? And they worked it to the hilt. And I would imagine, although I have very little contact with that sort of thing today, I wouldn't be surprised if it's still a way of life.
What were they getting in return?
Our votes. I mean, I never heard of anybody, either Mike Karp or Bill Weeks, ever asking anybody for money or anything like that. As I told you before, they would get coal. Before Easter, before Christmas, they'd get food baskets for some of the poor people. And we had a lot of poor people down there, because most of the people were first-generation immigrant families.
Ours is the most perfect party organization in the world, and I'll tell you why. It is the greatest welfare organization in the world. It does more to help the poor people. It administers to all. It looks after the wants of the poor and the sick.
Coal, scholarships, food, jobs, favors of one sort or another. This was the real strength of the VAIR organization. The committee men were down there on the streets, knew the first name of every man in their division. They handled this primary level of services. The next level, when someone ran into trouble with the law, was provided by the magistrates. Now, back in the days when lawyers were not yet king, everything from cruelty to animals to drunken driving to assault and battery was handled at the police station by the local magistrate, as much a party representative as an elected official. No legal training required, these men received the right to run for office only after years of faithful service to the party organization, and many were ward leaders. From this position, they dispensed their justice, cemented political loyalties, and also made money, often lots of money. For remember, Doe was politician, as one 48th ward leader once so eloquently put it, and justice was always partial to remuneration. Once a reporter with the Philadelphia Record, Sam remembers the magistrates well.
Oh boy, that was the biggest in for the politicians and the most politically controlled. And some of them were real czars. You know, they knew they had the power, and boy, they were tough to do business with. Most of them, or many of them, were real nice guys, but they were doing what any other guy would do in a political organization. So you're going to have some who are going to go way beyond the bounds, you know. And you have others who are going to do a good job. And we had a lot of them. But we had some real toughies, too. And then we had one magistrate who had what's that disease of the nerve veins? Something like versus another one. It'll come back in a minute, and we can go back to it. And, man, you could tell the minute he had it, because he would come into that police station, and they always held their hearings in the morning on the police cases in the police districts. And they would bring all these guys in, and then the magistrate would dispense his, quote, justice, close quote. And they used to say, he'd say, 30 days, House of Correction. And they'd take a look up at him, his face would be kind of reddish. And they, next guy up, 1 year. I think they could give up to a year and a day, as I remember it. And man, he was murdered. Other mornings he'd come in and be real affable. Oh, well, he Just slipped out a little too much last night, discharge. But they really had a wonderful racket, too. Now, I don't want to say that every further hearing is for a fix, but that was one way of getting a fix. They decide, you know, that this particular case hadn't been completely investigated yet, and they'd set it up for a further hearing. And then when the further hearing came up a week or whatever it was later on, I think it was about 30 days. I think they had to have that hearing finished within 30 days of the arrest, or 30 days in that magistrate's, the balance of the days in that magistrate's term in that area, in that district. And usually that gave the time for both parties to get together.
Negotiating it.
Yeah. I guess it's like miniature plea bargaining. But, I'm forgetting one of the main things. They would listen to the cases, too, on people who are arrested in raids or bootleggers. Bootleggers, raids and speakeasies, clubs, things like that. Arrested for anything. But whoever was booked had to have a hearing before the magistrate to see whether they would hold them. They said the term was hold for court. What they really were doing was holding him for a grand jury to hear the evidence, and grand jury practically automatically indicted if they turn it over to court.
But so 9 times out of 10, they just let the guy off, right?
9 times out of 10, he never got to the grand jury.
Right.
Yeah. And then if it did, if he had any political weight, he was going to beat it anyhow.
Now, there will be more on the magistrates later, but right now I'd like to move on to what the organization received in return for its plethora of personal services. Votes. Now, votes, of course, are the indispensable precondition of political power. Without them, all is lost. Consequently, the art of making votes had by the Verre days reached a high state of refinement, and voting fraud of one kind or another had a long and time-honored tradition. Lincoln Steffens, again way back in 1903, had noted with fascinated disgust that the Philadelphia machine controls the whole process of voting and practices fraud at every stage. The New Yorkers vote for Tammany Hall. The Philadelphians do not vote. They are disenfranchised, and their disenfranchisement is one anchor of the foundation of the Philadelphia organization. Frank grew up in the Second Ward.
You remember any, the whole Verre regime is associated now pretty corrupt.
That's why I say he bought all the votes. You know, he bought everything. You couldn't beat him.
No.
And then when he didn't run, his man would always fit in.
What role did the local ward boss play?
He was the guy, he bossed you, he told you who to vote for. You knew nothing and you voted his way. Very few had an education, very few would know enough. You went to him because if you had a little, he was the boss, the committee man was the man. He'd come over, hey, come on, you got to vote. He'd give you the bill and that's the way you voted.
And people would just vote?
Yeah, that's right.
Personal service made for a personal vote. Future Mayor Harry Mackey, campaign manager of Bill Verre's successful race for the United States Senate in 1926, spelled it out before a Senate committee investigating Verre's election to that august body. If you ask them the party they will vote for, they will name the division leader. Mary lived in the 46th Ward of West Philadelphia.
Did you know who the ward boss was in your area?
Yes, and I saw a lot of bad things done at the voting polls. One that was very bad. I remember this man, he had a crayon in his hand, and they were paper ballots. And when you put an extra marking on it, it invalidates the ballot. And I saw that done, and I knew him, it was my neighbor. And I didn't cause a commotion then, but I was so upset. And I told him, he said, what the hell's the difference, Mary? What's the difference? And I saw him do it so many times, I said, now look, if you do it once more, I said, I'm going to report you.
Well, they didn't have machines then. I mean,
no, they had paper ballots.
You weren't enclosed.
It was no enclosure. But he would go, and a lot of them were illiterate, you know, and didn't know. They just thought they were doing their duty voting, and they had these little markings where you're supposed to check off. And
well, then they didn't know who they were voting for, or what they were doing.
That's right. Today it's a different story. But when he invalidated their. In fact, he even helped them to vote. But when it came to what party he wanted in, why, he put this extra, and they...
Do you remember what party he was?
Republican. And I was a Democrat at that time. And when he did that, and I said, no wonder your party gets in all the time. Oh, I was furious. I was a Democrat. My father was, too.
Oh, years ago, was Republican.
But, of course, these... politicians, they had all the jobs, and they talked to their workers, and you have to vote this way, and you had to vote that way. But my father always voted, and they all knew how he voted, because he'd have the picture. And the glass would be broken sometimes.
But holy fan people, I went to Vine Street. It was a dividing line, two wards, and they had a flop house on Race Street. Well, I had a whole mess of flop houses on Race Street and over in Vine. So I went into one flop house on Ray Street, and I would get the guy on the desk. Well, most of the time, they were just, you know, guys who were temporarily sober, and they were doing the desk duty for the owner. So they told me whatever the hell they wanted. Another thing, they all assumed that I was from the city, and I'm checking up to make sure all my boys are registered. They just assumed. Now, I must have talked to thousands of people in those several months, and I'm going to give you the God's honest truth. Only three people, they asked me the second time, what I was doing and where I was from. And one guy gave me the same bit that the registration commission guy said. He said, yeah, I know you told me that. But he said, are you one of those damn reporters? I said, I am. He laughed. He said, well, anything you want. He was in an apartment in a crowded section in the lower end of Center City. But at this flap house, I walked in, I went to the desk clerk, and I hauled out, and I had the street list, and I said, could you take a couple of minutes? Can I take a couple minutes of your time? He said, sure. I said, I'm checking registration. He said, go ahead. What do you want to know? I said, I'll read the names on here. And I said, you tell me whether they're still here. If they're not here, are they dead? How long have they been dead? If they're not here, how long have they been gone? He said, sure. And that's what I did. So I went down the list, and he would say dead. And I'd say, how long? Oh, 4 years. No, he left last week, but he's on the bum down in Baltimore. He's going out to Chicago, or he went back to his family. Questions like that. But some of those guys had been dead for 4 or 5 years, and I'd find as many as on a list of, say, 30 registered voters in that one house, I'd find as many as 6 of them dead. And they were voting them, of course. So, just as I'm coming out of that one hotel, I'm about ready to go out of the door, and a drunk shuffles up to me, still half cracked. He could smell the wine. He says, got a minute, buddy? I said, sure. He said, I heard him read my name. I know I'm still on there. He says, am I still on the list over at the Golden Dawn on Vine Street? I said, wait, I'll see. What's your name? Mm-hmm. He gave me his name. I took out the next division list, the adjoining division, and there he was, registered in 2 of the flop houses. God knows how many there were registered, maybe 4 or 5. Wow.
So what percent would you say were phantom voters in, just in your survey?
Oh, gee whiz, in that tenderloin, I'd say, I'd hate like hell to give a percent. I couldn't back it up, I forget. But I know it was startling. It was as high, I think, as 15%. Those guys were phantoms or registered in duplicate.
And so they just take them around the block or send them
just
over?
Just take them across the street, buy them a drink, and then on the way over to the next polling place. But and out in West Philadelphia, I found one. Of course, nobody was going to vote them. But Mayor Harry Mackey had been dead for 2 years, and he was still carrying.
Oh, they were still carrying Mackey?
He's still carrying Mayor Mackey.
Why, our politicians know how to get votes.
Sure, they register horses and pushcarts and goats.
I live over the Wyandotte,
down by the Winnigawaik.
Invalidating and marking ballots, stuffing the boxes, the use of repeaters and phantoms, all contributed to the building up of the overwhelming majorities the machine brought in each election. Now, as we all know, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Words never truer spoken than in the strange case of the Republican machine in Philadelphia. 60-some years without a major house cleaning had permitted a lot of dirt to collect, and where personal service failed to obtain the desired result, or when additional funding was deemed necessary, there was always coercion. Though some divisions were run for the benefit of the people, others had as much extracted as they received, as Herman remembers.
In your community, did you have a
there
ward
was a,
boss?
A certain ward fear in, installed, a certain fear in, among the people. Businessmen were afraid to vote otherwise for the committee man. Homeowners were afraid. They would send an inspector and say, you have a tenant living. You must build a iron stairs going from the third floor down to the bottom for in case of a rescue necessity, of a fire or anything else. They could do different tricks. They could do send in a bakery shop and say that your place is not clean, fine. There were different tricks that they used in order to keep themselves in power.
So people were really intimidated.
Yeah.
Now, Herman's charges were general. So how about a more specific illustration? By the early 1930s, Joe lived in the 34th Ward of West Philadelphia.
When I was out of college, probably about 1930, even before Roosevelt came in, my dad had a store, a meat store. He had a kosher meat market, 40th and Girard, 40th Street near Girard Avenue. That was in the district later on that I won. The Republicans manipulated the storekeepers in that area as an example. In those days, we had what was known as blue laws, where you couldn't have trading on Sundays. And since ours was a kosher meat market, my dad would keep closed on Saturday, maybe open late after sundown as Saturday night, but we keep open Sunday for the customers that come in Sunday.
Right.
Well, now, since at that time I was a Democrat, or at least very few Democrats in that area, the Republican committeemen show their muscle by having the police stand in front of the store and close them up on Sunday morning and then issue summonses. And I recall that very vividly when my dad and a lot of the storekeepers on 40th Street received summonses to appear before a magistrate sitting at 39th and Lancaster Avenue. And the Republican magistrates were in control in those days. Wednesdays, I used to go down to the hearing and sort of represent the storekeepers and argued like hell that after all, we're closed on Saturday, there's no reason why we shouldn't be open on Sunday and so on. Sometime my argument was successful, and other times storekeepers were fined. That was on one occasion. The other occasion, other incident was when the Weights and Measures group was controlled by the Republicans under in that area in City Hall, and they would test the scales. In those days, they had hanging scales, you know. Well, they'd manipulate the inspectors would manipulate the scales to the point where they'd say, "Oh, you're cheating the customers by a quarter of an ounce or half of an ounce or maybe a quarter of a pound rather or so," and issue summonses to the storekeepers. Unless they were given something under the table.
Right.
In fact, once the business people in that area got together and said, "All right, we'll give them so much a week to leave us alone," which they did.
Now what, you might well ask, were the Democrats and corporate power brokers doing while the most perfect party organization in the world was running Philadelphia like a big urban fiefdom? Where were the police, the DA's office, and the court system? What were the newspapers writing? What became of Bill Vere? And finally, what brought the whole machine down? Well, for the answer to these and other questions, tune in next time as we bring you part two of Gang Rule in the City, or The Most Perfect Party Organization in the World.
Philadelphia, my hometown, my hometown, cradle of liberty.
Contributors to today's program have been Sam Barry, Sam Lewis, Philip Price, Frank DeCipio, Herman Rubinstein, Joseph Ominsky, and Mary Worthington. Interviews were contributed by Judy Levin. Musical thanks to Armand DeStefano and David Goldenberg. Your engineers were Paul Keller and Jay Goldman. Your host, Charles Hardy.
Where it has been through, and they welcome you. They for her loyalty. Let me her praise through all our days. Her happy people lead in every line. When the King Doodle came to town, he anchored right here. Philadelphia all the time.